Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon. Dr. Samira Umat is off to a medical clinic and conference learning all sorts of information that she'll pass on to us when she gets back. All right. Let me give you that phone number real quick. 800-465-8770 to call and talk with Dr. Mixon. We are live in the studio. Headed to Snohomish, we have Bob on the line. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call. Prostate cancer. How do you decide which treatment? Okay. The genetic test came back that it was a 10.8% chance of dying in the next 10 years if I did nothing. 4.78 or something like that for both radiation and the other one. I took your advice, got a second opinion. First surgeon said surgery. Second surgeon said radiation. The radiation person said radiation, and the general practitioner said he would opt for surgery. But the internet said anybody over 75 should have radiation.
Right.
How do you decide?
Wow.
How old are you?
75.
Okay. Wow, okay.
So you're right on that cusp.
Oh, so much information.
It's a bone scan. It's not anesthetized, and it's a set. How's that for all information?
That's great information.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the only thing I would prefer to have, of course, is to have you say, yeah, I went and got my studies done, and I don't have cancer. That would be better than all.
I know.
That would be the best.
Came back 18 biopsies, 15 had some levels of cancer, some almost none, some 15. The first surgeon said, you've had this for a long time. How's that? Quote.
Well, and that's probably true. For most of us, prostate cancer actually begins in fairly early life and kind of cooks slowly along until, we hit something that causes it to mutate and start growing faster. So it is generally, for the vast majority of men, a very indolent tumor. If by the time we're 75 or 80, most of us statistically have a 70% chance that if they were to take our prostate out and look at it carefully, 70+% of us would actually have a little nidus of prostate cancer somewhere in our prostate. But only 8% of people ever get a prostate cancer diagnosis. And of those, 93% of the low-grade cancers, the Gleason 6 and 7, 93% of them can go for 15 years with no further growth or problems. So, it's a disease that once upon a time we grossly overtreated. We got really too aggressive about it. And we did more damage with our therapies than the tumors were going to do for a lot of men. Now, if you've got a low-grade small tumor, surveillance, just sitting and watching it, is the preferred therapy for a great many surgeons. Your tumor is apparently large enough that everybody...
Well, the prostate's 40 grams.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and, you know, we'd like it 35 and under, but the point is how much of it is cancerous. And if most of your biopsies were positive, that says it's probably a good sized tumor. And everybody you've talked to, nobody has suggested, you know, simple surveillance. They've all suggested doing something.
And I did get an MRI based on your advice. Thank you. And it had two lesions. One was 59, rated as 59 or something like that, and 89.
Okay. So, all right. So clearly you're going to need to have something.
Yeah, how do you decide? And when everybody seems to be, like, divided down the middle.
Yes, I know. Okay. Well, I haven't seen your stuff. You've given me a good overview. I wish, you know, there are times people call me and I wish I were seeing them in an exam room in private instead of here on the radio with thousands of people listening in, you know, because there's a whole lot about you.
I did do your Galleri test. Okay. And I'm willing to pay if somebody wants to talk to me about it offline.
I understand. My point is I'm trying to figure out how long you plan to live. And how active you plan to be. Because
there's an interesting thing, because I am the most, I'm 75, I might be the longest lived male member of my family ever.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. So your men tend to die young, which does not bode well for us on a genetic standpoint.
Yeah, but they all did bad things like coal mining and...
Oh, okay.
So
lifestyle can overwhelm...
So 3-pack-a-day cigarettes, you know.
Yes, yeah. Overwhelms the genetics pretty thoroughly when you do things like that. All right. So let us assume you've got a genome that's going to let you last another 10 or 15 years. And you want to be active, and
I'm already active. That's what because I'm a NRA instructor for rifle, shotgun, and a bunch of other things. And I'm a scoutmaster. And let's put it this way: I volunteer at two food banks and still practice architecture.
I'd
say that's active.
Right.
Yes.
Now, well,
that's good.
But one other important factor. Do you have an active romantic life?
Thin. Not non-existent thin. How's that?
Okay.
All right. So
you can get into areas where I would become uncomfortable talking to you on the radio.
I know. That's my point. Because
medicine isn't one of them, okay?
Yeah, that's right. But you see, there's... each of these components have a different impact on your sex life. And so for men that are sexually active and for whom their romance is a very important part of their life, then you make different decisions from the guy who says, look, my wife has had cancer and she is incapable. And so we have not had sex for 10 years and probably never will. And so I have to make different decisions for that man, okay, both on his testosterone loads, et cetera. We treat the person, not the disease.
That's where that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
There are differences. I'm gonna derail you a little bit here. So we've talked about coming a lot lately about coming to your clinic, okay? Do you take people that have had breast cancer or prostate cancer?
Oh, yes. We take them both. Oh, yes.
And how do they fit into your program?
Well, we actually believe, with the women, we can actually do things that will significantly lower her risk of a breast cancer reoccurrence. Yeah. For
instance, 8 or 10 years out and no evidence.
And that's good. But cancer formers form cancer. People who have had one cancer statistically are at a much higher risk of a second cancer. And it may not be the same cancer. It may be another cancer. But people whose immune system has allowed one cancer to get going and cause problems are telling us that their immune system, it has that defect. And so we always worry about secondary cancers in anyone who has had a cancer. It's like people with an autoimmune disease. When you look at them, you usually end up finding three or more autoimmune diseases, not the one they came in with. So we've all got propensities for good and bad in our lives. And cancers, autoimmune diseases are just two examples of that. From what I'm hearing from you, here would be my tentative recommendation. I'd say I'd start by going with radiation, but I would go with a proton radiation, not external beam radiation. Okay, rather than gamma.
Proton radiation they seem to have different names these days.
Yeah, they do. Whoever making the machinery is going to give it a name. But it is, instead of using gamma rays, which is, it's the same stuff you get from an A-bomb, which is what most X-rays are. I mean, they called them, Madame Curie called them X-rays because X stood for unknown. She didn't know what they were. All right. But there is a particular form of radiation, a proton radiation, in which they strip off the neutrons and the electrons, and they bombard your prostate only with protons. And that is very controllable. There's not as many places that can do it, but it's getting more common. 20 years ago, when I first started reading about this, there were like three places in America you could get it done. And now there are hundreds of them. And I believe we got a couple of sites here in Seattle that can do it for you. But proton radiation they can target it. It will go through. It'll hit the prostate. But it won't go through out the other side and burn your bowel and your bladder and that sort of thing. So it's much more contained with fewer side effects than other forms of radiation.
Okay, so, and then right. The second question was, where we already touched on it, that people that have had breast cancer or prostate cancer as your patients, does that fit into your model at all?
Yes.
And how?
It does. It restricts in how we do it to some extent, though. For instance, testosterone in men that have had a prostate cancer is far less controversial today than it used to be. When I started this practice 25 years ago, we would not give testosterone to any man who had prostate cancer. And then we got to the point, the literature was saying, well, within 3 years of treatment, it's safe. And then it was down to 1 year. And now many doctors around the country are using testosterone in men whose PSA is effectively zero, less than 0.1 or so. And they're feeling safe.
This is actually the second call I called in about 3 months ago or 2 months ago. Uh-huh. And that's what got me on this path. And you referred me to some websites, and I read those, and they talked about using testosterone intermittently with metastatic people that had an androgen therapy alternately, and those people extended their lifespan, apparently.
That's right. And in fact, there is some literature out there now that is starting to point to the fact that if you give testosterone to men that have been treated for their prostate cancer, it appears we might be lowering the risk of a reoccurrence. Instead of putting them at higher risk, we may actually be getting them a lower risk by putting them on testosterone. So although the doctor we've talked to about that, who's done the research, has not yet published the paper. We like to know things before other people.
Your suggestion on the MRI was the best because the manual, up the anus, feeling the prostate, mine's absolutely smooth.
Yes. Yeah. We
doesn't reveal anything.
That's right. And that's why most of the doctors don't even bother doing rectal exams anymore, because our studies will find the cancer far, far faster than your finger will. I mean, the finger says you have to have a big enough tumor. It has to be on the posterior aspect of the prostate, and it has to be big enough that it's deforming the contours of the lesion. God, that's got to be a big cancer. No wonder they were all dying.
You know? Wow.
So, yeah. So now we do things that are a lot more sensitive than a digital rectal exam. So
is it a different program if you sign up for longevity for the people that have had cancer?
No, you're more work for us, quite frankly, but we put you in the same program. You know, we don't have one program that everybody gets the same treatment. Everybody's treatment is individualized. That's why our visits are at least an hour long at every visit. We have to know what's really going on with this individual, and we have to customize our program to your personal needs and the needs of your family. So,
you know, okay,
you ought to come on.
Don't
in,
have any more questions.
Get your testing done, but listen, go get that prostate cancer ablated first. Or you can start with us before that, I guess. Mm-hmm. But we won't be throwing all of the hormones at you until we know that you're cancer free. So, all right.
Okay.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Bob, for that call.
Have a great holiday, and I hope, Dr. Mixon, you have a profitable new year with your company.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And Merry Christmas. All right. Hear the music. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're back. Vincent, Kathy, and Howard. And if you have a question for Dr. Mixon, give us a call. He is live in the studio this week at 800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't.
I look at the forecast. I don't see any snowflakes yet.
No, in fact,
I do not.
It's going to be a relatively warm Christmas.
I know, isn't it? And last week, as I was driving home, I ended up going up north, and by the time I got home, I had a little dusting of white snow, a little bit of that, and you know, it stuck around for about maybe 2 hours, enough to get some pretty pictures, and then it was gone.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do at Christmas this year. You know, my wife and daughter are in China.
That's right.
They've been in Shanghai for the last couple of days. And then when they wake up, because it's middle of the night there, they just went to bed. When they wake up, they're going over to Chengdu for several days, probably a week or 10 days, 2 days, 2 weeks. And then they're going to go down to Shenzhen for some different set of relatives.
Wow.
And then home on the 30th. So it's just me and the cat at Christmas.
Just
this
year. You and the kitty.
Just me and the cat. And so I am tempted. I'm not quite sure yet, but I'm tempted to take off and fly down to San Diego or maybe to Florida and take the cat with me. She never knows what to make of a beach. All that sand. The only sand she sees is in her litter box.
Yes.
I take her out on the beach, and she absolutely goes crazy trying to figure out.
Where do I go?
That's right.
The world is my sandbox.
I'm in heaven.
Biggest cat box ever. That's awesome.
So we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, I got to stay busy. I'm working a lot of hours right now because I miss them so desperately that I've got to stay
active. You're focusing elsewhere. Okay.
I focus on work while they're gone so that I don't get morose because nobody wants to see a grown doctor cry.
No,
come on.
No. And you're dressed so nicely today, and your wife didn't have you. I mean, you always are, but your wife didn't pick it out for you today.
No, but she made sure that everything was ironed and hung
ready
in the closet
to go.
So that I could stay dapper while she's gone.
There you go. All right. Okay, let's take another phone call. We are headed, not too far away, right here in Seattle. Vincent is on the line. Hi, Vincent. Thank you for your call. Thank you for waiting.
Well, good morning, and thank you
good
for
morning.
Taking my call.
Yes, how can we help?
Sir. How can I help?
Well, let me start out real quick and just say I always find your show fascinating. And
well, thank you.
I know that many people benefit from your years of experience and, of course, your practice. So keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, sir. I plan to, actually. I have no desire to retire.
No.
You know, I saw a sign decades ago, and I really kind of took it to heart, and it has played out well in my life. It said, find something that you love to do, and then call it work.
There you go.
And that's what I've done. You know, I love going to work every day. And, you know, I get to work as much as I want, as little as I want. I get unlimited vacations. I make a very comfortable living. I'm with dozens of smart, hardworking, bright young people
that
are all slaving away to make me money.
Yes, they are. Yes.
So I,
got a great staff.
I should quit. Why?
No.
No. No. No.
They keep you going. They keep
That's
you
right.
going.
Yeah, having a great time. So, no, I'm going to be practicing for many years to come.
So. Well, everybody's fortunate for that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
how can
they
I help
are.
You today, sir?
Okay. Well, I'm just going to start and let you know with the biological physiology of my body, is running from a 72-year-old man perspective, okay?
Okay.
And so, you know, back when that China virus was going around, I just was able to pretty much isolate in a lot of ways. And near the end, when things were getting better and people were no longer wearing masks and the cases are falling off the cliff, boom, 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 I relaxed my methodology of lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
And of course, the laws of probability decided to smack me.
Sure.
And so in December, I'm going on my second year now, anniversary coming up. Of course, the China virus did what I said. It just came out and smacked me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the person that did not take a vaccination.
Okay.
And I did not suffer greatly. I experienced a variety of effects. And I understand that, you know, the circulation, airflow, et cetera, is, you know, probably the biggest aspect of what it did to people, and then everything else was secondary to that. That's my understanding. But anyway, circulation, blood flow, big one. So I want to start talking about neuropathy.
Okay.
And I was feeling really crummy during all this. Now, I have a strange little story here, so I hope you don't think it's too weird, but feeling kind of crummy, and I just thought, you know, I'm tired of this, and it's near the end, and because this is several days later. So I decided to take a hot bath and just relax.
Mm-hmm.
And got in the tub. Everything was just normal. And then when I got out, I stood up. And I like a hot bath now, so kind of like a hot tub thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got out, my feet, it's just so strange. All the effects I had were quick. They came on one day, and it would go away. And then the next day, I'd have another, and I had various ones.
Uh-huh.
And when I got in the tub, everything felt fairly normal. And then when I got out, I stood up, and the balls of my feet felt really weird to me. And I went, what the heck's going on? And I don't know if something could come on that fast or if it's just my imagination, but obviously it's not because I'm still here dealing with this. The balls of my feet felt numb. And like I was walking, like I had a leather pad between my feet and the floor. So it was like, what? That was just a strange feeling. So I did different little things. So I thought it would go away, first of all, just like all the other symptoms. And I, through the years, have had different things go on that were, I'm not a big fan of Western medicine because I've had every time I've ever had an experience where I needed to go to a specialist and then something was done, I've always had things come out worse. So I just thought, not going there.
Okay.
So I started doing things on my own, kind of like, you know, stimulating the foot, you know, massaging it, adding heat, thinking, you know, blood circulation, trying to go down that road. And anyway, to cut to the quick of this, this situation started slowly spreading. and it's now covering the bottoms of my feet pretty much. And I was just wondering, getting back to the theory of stimulation, I hear about these, because I go to the internet and look at things like a lot of people, and probably get steered down a wrong hole.
But, Dr. Google.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I have found these EMS foot pads, these electromagnetic stimulation foot pads. And I was thinking, it has low-level pulses, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if maybe if I could try something with that or like that and with a nitric oxide supplementation. I just wanted your opinion.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me start with a little COVID physiology. Okay. You said that it was respiratory, airflow.
Mm-hmm.
Kinda. That's what we thought it was originally, was it was a pneumonia that was killing people, but it's not. What it turned out to be is the lungs are basically, you got the bronchi, the air tubes going down to the alveoli, which are the air sacs where the air is exchanged. And then surrounding each of those air sacs, there's a bed of capillaries, very, very tiny blood vessels.
Yes, I'm aware of those.
An artery in one side, a little arterial inflow, and then a vein out the other side. And that's where the gas exchange actually takes place, where the carbon dioxide built up from your metabolic process is put into the alveoli, and the oxygen coming in from the air is taken out. So you get the carbon dioxide going out and the oxygen coming into the blood. Well, it turns out that microcirculation, those tiny, tiny blood vessels that are so small that the red cells go through in single file, those were clotting. And so, these patients are getting pulmonary thrombosis, actually, clotting of all that tiny microcirculation, and that was resulting in the lungs filling with fluid. It wasn't that the virus was causing a pneumonia. It's the lungs were filled with fluid because the blood supply had been cut off effectively to a lot of the alveoli, and they suffocated not from virus infection, but from the blood clotting triggered by the virus or the body's reaction to the virus, because we really think it was an immunoinflammatory process that our body mounted in reaction to the virus that caused the clotting. And that's why we're seeing people with strokes and heart attacks and kidney problems and so on from circulatory issues as a result of the virus and to some extent from the vaccine. The vaccine is triggering some of the consequences of the viral infections. So now we have a whole population that has to cope with this. If you haven't been vaccinated, you've almost certainly been infected at some point. Okay, now how this relates to your feet. tell you what, I'm going to tell you about that in about 2 minutes because I've just been notified we have to take a break at the bottom of the hour. And I'll be right back. We'll talk to you about the rest of what I think may be going on with you.
Okay, stay right there, Vincent. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon. He will be back in just a moment. Stay right there. And Kathy and Howard, we'll get to your calls as well.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again, with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. We are 9 days away. Hi there, and good morning. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. And on the phone, talking with Vincent. We're talking feet and neuropathy.
But we also had to talk COVID because we're thinking this is probably the genesis of his problem.
Mm-hmm.
When you were telling me about the hot tub, I was hopeful that you were going to say, oh, yes, and I had my numbness, and I got it, and I had this long soak, and the numbness all went away.
All went away, and I feel great.
And
But no.
In fact, that's when it started. Okay. The reason this is important is that this doesn't just happen in the lung. The microcirculatory damage is body-wide. It happens everywhere. It happens in the brain, the eyes, the kidneys, the hands, the feet, everything. The feet are the furthest away from the heart, and they have the most propensity for having problems, circulatory problems, because the blood has to get all the way down there and then be returned uphill and back to the heart to be recirculated. And so what will often happen in neuropathies caused by diabetes or dietary deficiencies or just genetics and bad luck, is that those vessels, those tiny, tiny microcirculatory vessels around the nerves will go bad. And the nerves are then starved for blood supply, and then we start getting neuropathies. This happens to an enormous percentage of diabetics because they damage their blood vessels a lot with the high sugar loads and the high insulins. In this case, it seems to be COVID. And what I'm guessing probably triggered you was you got in that nice, long, hot tub, and that dilated everything. Your arteries and your veins dilated. But the veins...
Uh-oh.
Is the bomb about to go off?
No. You still there? You still with us, Vincent?
Vincent, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
right,
very good.
I just heard something go beep,
yeah.
Beep, beep, timer. And in the movies, you know, that's always
that's
the bomb
right.
is about to go. So I was hoping that the arteries had dilated enough that you were going to improve, but... turns out not to be true. But what will happen is not only the arteries improve, so the blood flow is now increased, the veins have also dilated and the blood pools on the venous side.
Oh.
Because it can't get uphill back to your heart. So you've got stasis. You've got slow blood flow. The blood can get in, but it can't get out very efficiently. And I suspect that that was probably the trigger for your neurological injury, that the... You know, you ended up with that microcirculation clotting off in the tiny arterioles around the nerves, those plantar nerves. Now, what can you do about it? That's the question. And that's kind of an iffy issue, but one of the things that I have found that sometimes helps with my diabetic neuropathies and sometimes with some of the genetic neuropathies is high dose of polyphenols like resveratrol. Resveratrol is a still bean that has an enormous impact on blood flow everywhere. And it tends to open up the vessels and give the nerves a chance to heal. Now, the bad news is nerves, once they're damaged, do not heal quickly. They heal about 3 times slower than bone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you've got a nerve damage, you have to be very patient in hopes that it's going to repair, because it's not going to be immediate. Okay. So you're talking about getting yourself on a high dose of polyphenols and still beans such as resveratrol and astaxanthin, and staying on them for 6 months to a year to see if it's going to help. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, what we've got to try and do is to help those nerves to repair and recover as much as they will. And in a man in his 70s, they're already in pretty crummy shape, just from wear and tear of 72 years of life. And then the trauma from the virus made it worse. And now we're trying to undo the damage, and that's going to be a slow, difficult task if we can do it at all. But that's actually the best shot you've got at it right now. And I would do, and not only would I do, I am doing, okay, 350 milligram resveratrol capsules per day And the only place I know you can get them that high is on my website or my clinics, because I have them made specifically for my patients and myself. Mm. They usually come as 50 and 100 milligrams, and these are 350 milligrams.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. So I'm at over 1,000 milligrams a day. And this is a thing with some personal issues, because I'm a 76-year-old man. And I have a genetic propensity for neuropathy in feet and legs. And several years ago, I started developing some neuropathy in my feet, started in my toes, started working its way up towards the ankles. And I kicked my resveratrol dose way, way up. It's now been a couple of years. My toes and forefeet have completely recovered.
Wow. Good news.
The heels and bottom part of the ankle have not yet recovered, but they were the last ones to be damaged. So it seems to be, at least in my case, the first ones to be damaged are also the first ones to recover. And the later damaged ones have not yet recovered yet. So that's what I'm doing for me. That's what we recommend for many of our patients. It's something you might want to give a try.
Okay. In addition to the resveratrol, you mentioned astaxanthin. So is that a recommended dosage for that as well? Should they both be taken together?
Interestingly, astaxanthin and zeaxanthin are two xanthans that I think are really important. You know, I would probably, the astaxanthin is easier to get at, and it's but I think I would go with the zeaxanthin. And I'm trying to decide what dose. Tell you what, you have internet access, I know, because you've gone to Dr. Google. Go to our website, lmclinic.com, hit contact us, send me a note with a reminder about your issue, and I'll make sure I look up the appropriate doses for everything I would like you to take in addition to the resveratrol.
So additional things. Would one of those additional things just possibly be something like nitric oxide as well?
Yes. If you can increase your nitric oxide levels, that is always a help. And for that, I use a combination of both some over-the-counter things like Neo-Forte and a prescription drug like Tadalafil.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I will follow through with your instructions, and we'll go from there. And I do know it takes time. I'm patient. Mm-hmm. I've learned patience through my years. So all I can do is hope for the best, and I'll follow your advice. Thank you so much.
Sure. Isn't it odd, though, that we old-timers that have the least amount of time left
are the most patient.
Are the most patient.
Yes.
All right.
Oh.
We learn about patience through the years.
Yes, we do. Thank you for the call, sir.
There you go. Right. Thank you so much, Vincent.
Thank you for your advice. One quick thing.
Yes.
What about in addition using the foot massager, because you know the muscle stimulation?
It's not going to hurt. Anything that stimulates muscle activity is also going to increase blood flow.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. All right. So thank you so very much.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
All right. Thank you so much, Vincent. All right. Headed to let's go north to Edmonds. Kathy is on the line. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine, Kathy.
Hello, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks very much. Hi. So I want to talk about allergies. I moved to the Pacific. First of all, I should tell you I'll be 75 in January. Mm-hmm. I moved to the Pacific Northwest about 25 years ago. The past 20 years, I've developed allergies to stone fruit, which is horrible because I love it, some nuts, birch tree, not pollen, not grass. So in order to, like, get through the allergy season, beginning in February every year, I usually start Flonase, and I keep it up till August. And I keep trying to, like in June, I'll say, okay, is my allergy season over? So I'll stop Flonase, and it doesn't seem to stop. So I usually keep it up till August. But in the past few years, beginning in the fall, my right nostril at night, every night, is totally blocked up. And this year I've got like a phlegmy throat and a cough. The cough is productive and non-productive, but it seems to be higher up in my throat. And I'm thinking this might be allergies too. Always clearing my throat. So when I talked to my doctor, he said, continue the Flonase every day, all year. I don't want to do that. I want to know if there's any natural allergy treatment to treat the allergies and then to lessen the allergies.
Well, I can tell you what the doctors in our clinic often use is the quercetin with betaine.
Hydrochloric acid, betaine, that?
The betaine, the quercetin has a little betaine in it to activate it.
Okay.
And that combination seems to do a fair bit to alleviate a lot of people's allergies. So, 500 milligrams to 1,000 of quercetin a day. The capsules that we have are 500 milligrams each. So you might want to give that a try and see if it helps. But now you said your doctor, so I presume you've seen your physician about this.
Yeah.
So he took swabs, he did cultures and so on.
No, here's the thing. I talked to my GP. This is just too funny. And she gave me a referral to an allergist who can't see me until April. And the instructions for coming in are, but 6 days before you come in, you have to stop all your allergy medicines. So what happens in April to allergies? They're like at their worst. So I can't see until April. And I can't take my medicine. So I'm like, what am I going to do?
Yeah. Whipper. What on earth is going on? You know, before COVID, you could get a doctor appointment in 3 weeks or so. And now it's 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
And did half the doctors in the country die? Did they all quit? Why is it so much harder to get in to see a doctor now than it was pre-COVID? Where are all the doctors?
Yes.
Where are all the doctors? They got to make a song.
Yeah.
Where are all the doctors?
Well, I mean, there's some great doctors out there. I love the Witch Doctor song. You know, my friend, the Witch Doctor, he tells me what to do. No, but that's right. Ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. Anyway, but yeah, it's just driving me crazy. You know, I'm 76. I was not happy with the insurance carrier I had, so because they didn't cover Dr. Nelson and the team over there. So I changed insurance carriers, and then I had to go find myself a new primary care doctor. Mm. And so I went on the website, and I picked one, a nice fellow who spoke some Mandarin, so I figured my wife and I could both see him because Mandarin's her primary language. God, my Mandarin is really stinky. But anyway... And it took me 3.5 months to get in to see the guy.
Wow.
And I saw him once, and I'm not going back.
That was enough.
So now I'm looking for another one. It's so hard to pick a doctor. And, yeah, I got to admit, I'm probably pickier than most. I want a doctor who, you know, knows at least as much as I do about my problems.
Yeah, that right there is the bar that is the highest.
And this young man was clueless. Mm. So, he kept telling me things. Well, nobody needs supplements; just eat a good diet. And I said, "And doctor, how do you control your patient's diet? Just out of curiosity,
just wondering." Yeah,
April, huh?
The answer is I haven't gone through the cultures. I haven't had all the really specific testings because I can't get in there in April. But I'd really like to know. I mean, I'll try the quercetin. But is there anything that, aside from obviously I don't eat stone fruit,
obviously stay away from the stuff that you know causes troubles. And you do need a full allergy workup. You need to get all your allergies identified. You know, which may restrict your lifestyle for a while until you get a chance to recover some. But and then you want to look into why are you developing these allergies? I mean, I'm presuming this has not been a lifetime problem for you, or it would have been addressed long ago.
No, like I said, I just became allergic to the stone fruit nut business like about 20 years ago, and now it seems like I get allergic to lots of lots of things.
And see, this makes me wonder about things like leaky gut syndrome that can trigger a lot of allergies. And so in addition to an allergy workup, I'd want someone that could do a leaky gut syndrome workup on you, too.
That's a really good suggestion. I have a feeling that is probably it.
As people age, the lining of the bowel ages, too. And those tight junctions that keep the proteins and stuff out of our bloodstream, you know, they're supposed to go through our gut and get broken down into the component amino acids, and we absorb the amino acids. But there are proteins down there, and some of them are from bacteria, et cetera, and some of them are for foods that did not digest. And as we age, sometimes those junctions open up. They get weak, and the protein actually gets through the lining of the bowel and is exposed to the bloodstream. And so we start developing allergies. And frequently the allergies begin in our gut.
I totally agree with that. I it's kind of like I knew about leaky gut a while ago and haven't really thought about that. And that is just like, it just like struck a chord with me. So what until I can get in to see the GI guy or woman in the next 6 months or so, is there a supplement I can take? Like, is licorice, like DGL, anything like that will help my leaky gut syndrome?
No, it's primarily dietary treatment to find out what you're reacting to. And then we've got a leaky gut protocol at the clinic. And actually, Dr. Pentland, this is his specialty.
Dr. Pentland.
P-E-N-T. Okay. Yeah, Pentland. He's here in the Kirkland Clinic. But, you know, you can have your doc from any of the places use his protocols or chat with him about you or get a consult. So
okay. I'll do that. So in order to see Dr. Pentland, do I have to be a patient of the whole
That's
clinic?
Oh, that's right. Yes, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Tell you what. Let me see if I can get Dr. Pentland to write up a protocol on leaky gut and maybe stick it on our website.
Oh, that would be wonderful. That would be wonderful.
In fact, during our next break, I'm going to send him an email and ask him to do that. Why not? It sounds like a reasonable thing to do.
There we go. Yes.
Again, nice to own the joint. I can do what I damn well please.
That's right. So, give yourself a raise, Dr. Mixon. Yeah.
Okay. Your website is longevitymedicine.com?
It's, lmclinic.com is the easiest way to get there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The LM stands for Longevity Medical, and there's just clinic, no S on the end. lmclinic.com. Yeah. I got the website when I only had one clinic. So.
Yeah. All right. Cool. If you could do that, that would be absolutely wonderful. I would really appreciate that.
Yeah. I don't know how fast he'll get to it because I've got him busy doing a lot of other stuff. But, I'll rattle his cage and see if I can get him to do it for us.
Super. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Oh, thank you for the call, Kathy. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Here is the number to get through, 800-465-8770. We have in Burien, Howard is waiting to talk with you, Dr. Mixon. Good morning, Howard.
Hello, Howard.
Good morning, people. Yes, 74-year-old male, and had a hemorrhoid pop out last week. And I had this happen once before, maybe 10 years ago, and I went to proctologist or whatever they call them nowadays, and they used a rubber band method, you know, to squeeze it, and it fell off.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that procedure?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I used to do that back in the 70s in my first practice.
Well, it sounds like fun. Well, anyway.
Yeah, that's why he's got rubber bands on his desk. Oh.
Yeah. I wonder what you did with all the old ones.
Yes. Well,
anyway, so this time, luckily due to a cancellation, I got him the doc right away. Otherwise, it'd be January, as we were talking about earlier. And anyway, he didn't say it needed that, although it appeared to me it was just like last time. He said just keep it cleanly, you know, the cleanliness part. I don't want to go into all that. Take three Stitz baths a day, and they should be okay. But this has been 4 or 5 days, and it's still the same size, if not larger. I just wonder what your take on that is, if you have any expertise there.
Well, yeah, it's been a few years since I treated a hemorrhoid surgically myself, since I've not been in the operating room for 25 years. But yeah, the banding procedure was a very fast office procedure we could do, but it's only safe with the internal hemorrhoids. And there's two sets of hemorrhoidal plexuses, big veins. Hemorrhoid is basically varicose veins of the anus. Okay.
Right.
That's really what it is. And so, especially with straining at stool, you basically increase the pressure in these veins and they dilate and dilate and dilate. And eventually they get so big and tortuous, they actually can start sticking out of the rectum.
Yes.
And so you can band them if they're the internal hemorrhoids. The external hemorrhoids, you don't want to band because they're at risk of developing a cellulitis, an infection that can really develop a necrotizing.
Okay, now I should have had him explain that because this is an external.
Yeah, so, and so that's why he didn't want to band it because it's dangerous.
So is it supposed to go away or what happens?
It depends. Once more, this is one of those things that you can't treat effectively on the radio. What he's hoping is going to happen with the Sitz baths is that, the blood flow will come in, your fibrinogens and fibrin agents will come in, and it'll dissolve the fibrin in the clot. And the hemorrhoid will shrink up and go away because your body has dissolved that clot that has formed in the varicosity. Because that's really what it is. You get a big varicose vein there. The venous blood flow is stagnant and slow. And then you're straining at stool. You increase the pressure anymore and you form a clot. And that's why it's so painful. You've actually got a blood clot in that hemorrhoid.
And he did mention there was a clot there. So, I'm with you now. Yeah. I just wonder, is there any supplement I can take to help dissolve?
Yeah.
My blood's very good anyway because I'm taking, omega-3s and different supplements.
And I'll tell you, this is going to sound kind of gross, but it's something that he could have done in the office. To give you almost instant pain relief, and that is to
use a little
little local lidocaine, and you just make a little incision and you expel the clot.
Okay.
Just give it like squeezing a zit. You make a cut in the vein and you push it out and,
I wish you would have done that.
So that's fast. It's kind of messy and bloody, but what the hell? Doctors live in mess and blood.
That's true, yes.
Mr. Doc Martin.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, delivering babies. Oh, my God, I've been peed and pooped on. And anyway.
God, I can imagine. I've heard some of your stories over the years. Yeah.
Oh, look at the time.
Well, I think I'm trying to understand what's going on. So
yeah.
I
tell you what,
appreciate the help on this.
There is an antifibrin a supplement, and I'm trying to think what the name of it is, and I'm blocking it at the moment. Go to Dr. Google, just put in supplements to dissolve clots, and I'm quite sure it'll pop up.
He's on speed dial, so I should be able to do that.
All right.
There you go.
Okay.
Hey, Howard, thanks for the call.
Take care, sir.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.
Oh, and Merry Christmas to you. Merry Christmas to you. Next week, we will be with our families, or at least most of us will. Dr. Mixon will be with the cats somewhere.
Okay.
And we will be recorded Christmas weekend and also New Year's weekend. So we will be back live in the studio. Of course, we will have a show featuring our best phone calls, some of our favorites from the year. So I hope you'll tune in and have a very Merry Christmas from all of us here at Leading Edge Medicine. Have a great rest of your weekend.